Today I have Zach Rader on the show. We're going to be talking about breath work, meditation, different types of healing modalities, and how to work with and understand your intuition. It's a beautiful talk. Zach has a great approach to switching the way that we contextualize our stories into something positive as an opportunistic instead of something as a detriment. So really love this conversation. Hope you get something out of it. We'll see you on the other side. But first, a message from our sponsor. Anamkara is a gorgeous meditation and healing center, offering daily in-person and virtual services to help bring you back to the center of who you truly are. They serve through a collective of practitioners, healers, and teachers, offering daily meditation classes, one-on-one healing sessions, workshops, personal ceremonies, and private events, plus corporate and team training, all with mindfulness at the core. The center itself is located in the heart of downtown Spokane. Every part of it was built, designed, and curated for you to drop into your calm place. They have a large community space for daily meditation classes and workshops, as well as two one-on-one healing rooms, a community kitchen to gather for tea, plus a well-stocked apothecary for you to gather all of your self-care and ritual needs. Hannah Talbot, the owner and founder of Anamkara, dreamed of opening this space for years. It is her ultimate manifestation, and she cannot wait to share it with those in the Spokane community, but also through the virtual ethers, wherever you may be. Pop in for a class today. You can follow them on Instagram to book and stay up to date. Check out the website, the full schedule, meet the practitioners, and view all the offerings. Visit them at anamkarahealing.center. Anamkara, may you be nourished and ignited. Our healing journey can be difficult and might feel lonely at times. That's why I love sound baths. When we can get together in a community, we intrinsically support and feel supported by others. And that combined energy can help us go deeper into our own healing journeys. And all you have to do is just lay there for 1 hour and listen to beautiful healing sounds. I'm a sound healing practitioner, and I hold sound baths on a regular basis in the greater Seattle area. You can find my next sound baths on my website at adamrealhealing.com. That's Adam, A-D-A-M, real, R-I-E-H-L, healing, H-E-A-L-I-N-G.com. AdamRealHealing.com. Your healing is worth your time. And now an uninterrupted podcast with Zach Rader. All right, welcome back to our show. Today I'm talking with Zach Rader. Zach is an international teacher, speaker, and healer. And I believe you're from the Sedona area, if I'm not mistaken. And Zach was introduced to me by another friend, Hannah, who Hannah has been just a real gem finding guests for my show. And I believe that you've just come off a little bit of a tour and you were in Washington. Unfortunately, I missed you in person. I had to get down to Texas and handle some family stuff, but I'm really happy to have you virtually on the show today. So thank you so much for your time, Zach. I really appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah. So you, you're in the midst of kind of a tour right now. You're back home for a bit and then you're going to be in Vegas for a little while. So what's your tour that you're working through right now?
It's a lot of breath work. Mm. So doing breath work events all over the place, which got shut down a little bit the last couple of years. People didn't want to breathe as much around each other.
Yeah.
So it's really, really refreshing to be back out there again and working with a bunch of people.
Yeah, and I bet the vibe has to be really, really energized to be within community again, to have that sangha, to be, you know, able to have this stuff in person instead of virtually again, for both you and for the practitioners. I'm sure there's like this beautiful energy of like, oh my God, we get to heal as a group again.
Yeah. It's almost like, people are just ready for even more in everything, I think. And so it's been just really powerful, and you know, the openings and the awakenings and the healings and everything that are happening are really beautiful.
Yeah, with the work that I do, I'm not a breathwork practitioner, but I do energy work on my end, and I feel the same way. There's been this, I think this realization of how much healing needs to be done now that once the pandemic hit and people had a chance to slow down and kind of assess what's going on in their lives. And the unfortunate thing was a lot of those healing modalities were not available in person at that time when people were starting to go through their stuff. So, you know, luckily, you know, there are some things that we can do online and virtually to get the point across and to offer what we can, whether it's a virtual, you know, energy session, breath session, things like that. But to have that opportunity to be in person again and to feel that energy of everybody healing together, you know, we're all on our own paths, but when we get together as a group, we get that magnified energy. And there's something special about that. You know, I've been having some, a lot of the sound baths that I do around this area have gone from, you know, 5 to 7 people up to, you know, 50 or 60 people now. And that the energy, that shift of energy and that impulse and that, that healing path that people are on really is, you know, and I can palpably feel it now that we have those groups that are becoming a little bit bigger and people that are stepping into their healing that might not have had an idea that they had trauma that they wanted to deal with before. Now they're having that opportunity and they're finding these communities, and it's just beautiful to see the offerings be received. You know, and to feel the excitement for people that are on this hard path that is really, really is work. And it's the worst four-letter word out there, but it's the work that nobody's going to do except for us, you know? So we've got to lift those boulders and we've got to do that work ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what we came here to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone the other day. It's like, say you got to heal every single piece of personal trauma that you've ever been through. Well, now you're just working on your ancestral. Now you're just working on the collective. It's like, there's always something to open up and bring some more space into.
Definitely. I have a friend that was talking to me about something like that. And he said, when you start your healing path, you're healing seven generations prior to you, and you're setting up the healing for seven generations after you. You know, because like you said, you know, a lot of our relatives, they didn't maybe realize that they were going through trauma. They didn't have the time to understand that, you know, the Great Depression was a very traumatic experience for everybody, you know, and now that we've gotten past that, you know, we're healing our great grandparents' trauma from having to go through that, the racisms, the wars that have happened, you know, the colonizations, like all these things that have been happening since, you know, that go lineage back in all of our histories, you know, as we start to do our work, some of that stuff starts to get unraveled too. And then we can start to set up our kids and our kids' kids and, you know, the people that are around us for those next few generations of healing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. With breathwork, what type of breathwork are you practicing right now?
I found breathwork over 20 years ago. So I've been doing it almost my entire adult life. Everyone I've found, I think I've tried. So I've done all kinds. The one that I mostly work with when I teach is a circular connected or like a rebirthing style. It's done in Shavasana. You're on the ground really flooding the body with life force, and that extra life force is going to go heal. It's going to open things up. It's going to work through things. And so, so many different experiences can happen once you get that much prana going in your body. And it just always knows, it's like, what would be the thing that serves us the most that day? So.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Holotropic breathwork is one of the most intense medicines, I guess I should say, that I've ever experienced. You know, I like to sit with plant medicines, psilocybin mainly, for big, big journey work and, you know, to try to get those big boulders moved. But I remember the first time I tried holotropic breathwork, I was flabbergasted at the experience that I had and the journey that I went on, and just, you know, my own personal experience, but also I was in a group of about, about 15 people and just auditorily being witness to other people's experiences, you know, the loud wailings that were going on in different variations of the room and the people hitting the mattress that they were on and just having their own experiences, you know, while I was, it was like the soundtrack of my own experience, you know, and it was, my experience wasn't as intense as what I was hearing some of the other folks going through, but that was like, I think it was fueling my experience, you know, the energies from that, helped me get deeper into the place that I was going to. And from the guide that guided us through that breath work to the fellow practitioners that were with us, the soundtrack, the whole experience was just such an amazingly beautiful and life-changing experience for me. And I, you know, just really profess that to everybody that has some kind of healing journey, like try breath work, try these different modalities out there, because you never know which one's really going to land with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I think breath should be included in anything, whatever it looks like, right? It's like any good practitioner in anything is like, hey, tap into your breath, because it's just going to enhance whatever it is that we're doing or open up the energy even more. So
yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
Do you work with children by chance?
I do work with some. Yeah.
Okay. That's one thing with, that's a topic that's kind of come up a bunch on this show is how that we have these better understandings of how our, you know, how our nervous systems work, our parasympathetic, our sympathetics, you know, we have all these understandings now, for what we know, but we're still not readily teaching this to, you know, to kids growing up, to how to self-regulate their systems, to how to, you know, get themselves out of anxiety and depression from our breath work or from meditation or from some type of movement practice.
Yeah, I agree. It should be taught like as soon as we're teaching them anything, like start working on the breath and realizing it's like, oh wait, I can actually relax and calm myself down. When I find myself out of balance or when I found myself wound up, it's like, hey, what's my breath doing?
Right.
Like if that was just a check-in that everybody had, that would probably change a lot of things.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and my kids are, you know, I started that work with my kids when they were in their teens, and teenagers are very hard to adapt to things that might seem silly. And I can honestly say that some of the breath work that I've been a part of have, you know, it seems silly, but, you know, at the same time, like, what am I gauging that silliness against? It's my own discomfort, you know, of stepping towards something that, like ecstatic dance, where I'm like, well, I'm not doing it right. Well, there's no way to do it wrong. It's ecstatic dance. You just feel your body and you move with it, you know. So trying to introduce a lot of this stuff to my kids when they were teens, you know, it took a little while for it to land, but, you know, slowly but surely we're starting to sneak that stuff in there to where it's acceptable. But I think, you know, if we can start to teach these kids at the age of like 5, that if you have nervous energy in your body and you shake, you know, for like two to like 5 seconds, just get that energy out, you know, do a full body shake and then just go on with your day. If everybody's doing that, then it's not so silly, right? You know, so, and if it's working for you and you're finding results with it, then who cares if it's silly?
Yeah, totally. I agree.
Yeah,
you know, it's funny. I live in Sedona, and so it's you know, the culture is a lot of little kids know a lot of really cool spiritual practices. So
that's beautiful. That's beautiful, man. Well, for yourself, man, you you kind of went through a series of awakenings in your early time of your healing that helped progress you to where you're at now. And I love just listening to people's journeys. That's one of my favorite things. So do you mind talking about, you know, some of those series awakenings, some of those, you know, interesting moments that happened around your healing that kind of progressed you to where you're at now?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, 10,000 awkward things, but, but there was some big, you know, one of the things that really, really opened me up and, you know, changed everything, it was, you know, in 2012, I was going through these, just having these really interesting sensations in my body. Like, you know, there was weeks, and especially I was already doing healing work at the time, but there would be, you know, just have like, I felt like cold water was pouring through my hands. And like all the time, I'd always be wiping off my hands thinking they were soaking wet and they never were. And it was like the start of like really paying attention to my hands. And it would turn up in healing sessions and it would be like, wow, this is really interesting. And then, you know, a combination of, you know, there was an incredible conversation that I had that made something click. Someone just said, you know, a sentence that just really opened me up. And all of a sudden it was like, I just started to almost like have a deeper knowing of what this all is. And when I started to drop into that, it kind of, blew me apart for a bit. And so there was just, there was so much energy moving through my body that, that I you know, wasn't the best functioning of it for a little bit of time.
Yeah.
But I was also enjoying everything I was at. And so you might catch me just staring at a wall for a while and just like enjoying myself so much. Cause I was just taking it all in.
Yeah.
That became, you know, that kept teaching me and showing me things. And it became like part of the healing work that I started doing even more, which was, you know, whatever the frequencies or energies are, I started calling them space. I just referred to them as space. Cause it's like, they weren't like energies. If we look about energy, it was kind of like energy is the positive and negative. It's the polarity or the right or the wrong. We often get stuck and bouncing back and forth between that. And so there's this frequency that I've just been calling space forever. It kind of comes in and really just dissolves and opens that up and creates a bigger space or a bigger field.
Wow.
And now that energy doesn't affect us the way that it used to.
Wow. And was that an intuitive kind of thing that as that energy started to come in and you put the label of space onto it, kind of intuitively just kind of let that grow and let that understanding kind of gnosisly come inside of you?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a learning journey. It's like, I think, you know, for years and years and years, it would still be showing me something new or opening up something different. You know, I used to, right after it happened, I was really like, my reality was so shifted. There was definitely 3 weeks where I felt just, I, I didn't believe in any of this stuff. I felt like everything felt like a dream, and I was very aware that I was the dreamer of the dream.
Wow.
Before that, you know, I joke around sometimes that, you know, I've never felt exactly what I used to call sober sense. Like before that moment, it was just like, it was a new, there's been a new experience with everything where it's not as, it's like just knowing that everything is so much more than what we see and what we think it is.
Right. Did you have a spiritual practice or a religious practice before you had this kind of awakening or these series of awakenings?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, about 18 years old, I grew up without religion. About 18 years old, I just knew there was something out there and I wanted to find it. And so I dove in hardcore to reading every possible book I could and taking every course and class. And I did that for 12 or 13 years. And I understood a lot of stuff.
Okay.
I had a lot of books memorized or whatever, but I was still miserable. And I used to be very analytical, like very analytical to that point. It's like, oh yeah, it's all about knowledge and you just figure it out and that's going to get you what you want. And I feel like I needed to do that long enough to prove to myself that that's not the way.
I feel like you're talking to me directly right now. man, I did something very similar when I started on my path. I didn't grow up with any religion, you know, didn't really have spirituality, didn't want to give enough time to think outside of myself is what I finally realized for myself. But when I did find, you know, the spiritual path for myself, I dove into books and I figured that was okay. Let's just read books. I can just read all these books. And I think I realized about three or four years into it that with the exception of like, you know, maybe a small handful, I probably went through about 150, maybe close to 200 books in that time. And with the exception of maybe a small handful, I think I was just reading for the sake of reading, you know, it was just like a new addiction for me, you know, but in a way I had to switch that addiction to something, what was seemingly more positive, even though I wasn't retaining that knowledge at the time. You know, I've gone back and read a number of those books again, because, you know, in this different mindset, as I'm retaining knowledge, it actually landed in a different way. But, you know, a lot of times in the beginning, I was just reading for the sake of reading, you know, just to try to get my mind in a different place and try to understand what I could understand, even though I wasn't understanding all of it. And so just like ravishly reading through books just for the sake of reading. But now, you know, I try to go back through and when I do read these, you know, books that I know will land with me in a special way, I try to take notes with them. You know, I read them, I take notes and I, you know, try to underline and highlight and reference back and things like that. So I at least, you know, for my own personal, growth pattern, at least I feel like I'm doing something positive with that reading, trying to seek the knowledge instead of just reading the words on the page, just to read the words on the page.
Yeah. Well, and it's like the knowledge, it's like when there's a knowledge that resonates with us, it's like, oh yeah, that feels really good. It's like, that's because part of you already knows that. It's like what they're saying is pointing at something that I know is true. It's not necessarily the exact words or the exact way that we understand it, but that knowledge is pointing at something that I know is true.
I love that.
And so it might not be it might not be those exact combination of words or whatever. You know, also during that time, you know, I was still waking up from being very analytical, and I was doing a healing session with somebody, and it was like this voice came in that was like, if you can understand it, that's not what it is. And that became my mantra for quite some time, of just catching myself of like, look at how I think I have this figured out, and look at how I think I've got this whole situation figured out. And it was like, to actually feel the energy of when I think I have something figured out, it's like, it's really small and tight and dense. And it was all these places of like, wait, if that's, maybe that's not what I think it is. And it actually like, oh wow. And then it actually opens up space with it. And I might discover a lot more things about it. It might feel a totally different way when I actually drop into like, hey, what if it's bigger than that?
So that's, I love that, because, you know, what you were just saying is that, you know, what you quote unquote thought you had figured out was this small little speck, but what your awakening showed you is that space is everything. Right. And so I love that, because that's like playing with your own intuition, right? And you're just figuring out how your intuition is talking to you. you know, the space, the openness of what that awakening showed you is much, much vaster and much more complicated than this little speck of, I got it figured out, you know? Oh. And so the opportunities and the ideas are much more, more vast with that spiritual idea than the, I've got it pegged, you know?
Yeah. And one of the things I tell people, it's like when they're in a healing process or working on something or, you know, or it's finances or whatever, it's like, we think we know what's wrong. Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I just need more money, or I just need to heal this thing or whatever. And it's, that's often what's getting in the way of the actual healing. Mm-hmm. And so it's usually bigger than that. And, you know, after workshops or retreats, I let people know, it's like, hey, when stuff comes up after this, 'cause it will, you know, we think we have this feeling in our body, and it's like, oh, I know what that is. That's anger. And I must be angry because of something. And our mind is quick to blame it on something. This is what this is, and this is why it is. And so I always give people, I love the question, what if this doesn't mean what I think it means? Mm. And it's an opportunity to set aside the narrative or the story for a little bit and really be with the essence of what this is.
Wow. And that's...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that's really hard for us to do because we're so good at spitting stories, and we love stories. Humans love to have stories. You know, so yeah. When we get our mind gets into these stories, we just start to follow them, not realizing we're also penning them as we're following them. And then all of a sudden we're in this rabbit hole of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And stories aren't bad. Stories are beautiful. Like stories make the world even more gorgeous. Mm. We've just been taking so many of them a little more seriously, or a little too seriously.
Yeah.
So I love to remind people, you know, that we have these wonderful minds, and they're incredible, right? They're so good at doing what they do, but they're also not good at everything.
Right.
They also have limitations. And so our minds actually need context. They need beginnings and endings. They need boxes and structures. And, you know, that's not the case. It's like infinite has no beginnings or no endings.
Right.
And so our mind is not capable of understanding infinite. It gets it as a concept, but it can't actually grasp something that has no beginning or ending.
Right.
And so I always remind everybody that who we really are, what we really are, why we're really here is beyond any story we could put to it. And so it's cool to have a story, but let it be bigger than that.
Right. I just watched a documentary last night on Netflix called The Art of Infinity, and it has a series of mathematicians, theoretical physicists, and, you know, a lot of folks, statisticians that are talking about the idea of infinity. And how vast we think infinity is. And, you know, they have all these different, you know, suggestions and ideas out there. And it was, you know, I kind of got the grasp of infinity, you know, like we hear it all the time. It's the biggest number. But what really kind of screwed me up is when they started talking about how there's something bigger than infinity. And I'm like, wait a minute. Whoa. Okay. So, and again, it's those questions that we don't think to ask until we hear them, you know, like what was around before the Big Bang? You know, I love the opening line of the Tao is the Tao is older than God. You know, it's like, whoa, Jesus Christ, I didn't think about that. Like what's before God, you know? So I love those posing those questions to kind of break up the continuity that we think we have figured out up here. And then we just pose a different question that in a way kind of shatters our reality in a beautiful way. And it's like, oh God, I don't have it figured out. And that's beautiful, right? Because nobody's going to ever have it all figured out.
Totally. When I was a little kid, it was like, before I knew any of this, I used to love this, have this experience of blowing my own mind. Mm. And it would be like, how, you know, I would just stare at space and be like, how is there no end at space? Or like, if there was an end, what would it be? Oh, it's a wall. What's on the other side of the wall? And it would just be like, your mind just... can't do it. And I would get to a place where it just blows open, and it would just be, it just, you know, now I would call it just like sitting in pure presence. Hmm.
That's
so that was a game I used to play when I was a kid.
As a kid too. I mean, like we love blowing our own minds, but just to have those thoughts as a child, like that's so vast, you know. I think it's kind of like us trying to have like a cat understand quantum physics. You know, for them to understand quantum physics is like for our brain to understand the vastness outside of what we understand as physics and what we understand, like that happens in our physical realm. You know, maybe we're just not capable of understanding like things like what happens in a black hole after you pass the event horizon. Like maybe our brains just can't compute that because that's just not the way we were designed. You know, maybe that's that, you know, next level as we progress and as we start to, you know, evolve as humans or whatever beings that are out there, then we start to, you know, grasp the concept of, you know, these bigger theories that are out there. But right now with the brain that we have, we can only get so much.
Yeah, it's like there's no limits to what we can know, but there is limits to what our mind can understand.
That's beautiful. I love that. That's beautiful. You you mentioned something earlier about you know, when we're turned on to something, it's kind of like we're remembering or we're being reminded of something. And I actually have the word remember tattooed on my fingers and facing me, so it's a reminder for me. And you know, that concept really hits me a lot. You know, we have that remembering of I'm remembering the fact that I was passionate about something that I'm now remembering that I'm learning, right? So think about past life regressions, right? So like I'm in this life now stepping towards sound work, and it's beautiful and it lands in a special way to me, and in a way it makes me feel like this is something that I've experienced in the past, in my past lives, that was very, very big part of it. And now I'm finally to a point in this life where I can remember how magical that experience is and embrace that and now utilize that as a practice. But also the fact of like being a member and remembering that person, right? So we're like putting our pieces back together as a human being of the things that we're passionate about, of the things that we want to utilize in this current life, you know? So there's like that double meaning of that word remember, but it always, you know, it's this beautiful thing about us putting ourselves back together with the memories, the thoughts, the ideas, the concepts, everything that has gotten us successful in our previous lives that we've wanted and willed ourselves to remember in this life, but we can't make ourselves. We have to lead ourselves to that own path ourselves. And so now that we're finding that, that's when that like the goosebumps happen and that inner side, that inner energy lights up whenever you know, like when I got tuning forks, I'm like, I got tuning forks because I just felt impelled to, right? And then I started to utilize it. I'm like, oh my God, these feel so natural. And I feel like I know exactly where they need to go and what to do with them and how to utilize these in my practices to help people, you know, with little to no training. It was just one of those intrinsic things that I was drawn to that I got and I started to utilize. And I, you know, as I've opened myself up and quieted my mind down a lot of those things have started to approach me, whether it's knowledge base or, you know, people that have entered in my life or whatever it is, you know, there's these beautiful things. Once we can quiet down the internal thoughts and that internal chatter, that monkey brain that goes from, you know, thought to thought, these beautiful kind of messages start to come in, you know, and it's just trying to figure out how to stay quiet enough and how to understand what the messages are coming in that are external and what messages my ego is just trying to whisper to me and mask as a message.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, one of the things of that is the way that they feel. Mm. Right. So I'm such a huge feeler. I think feeling is everything. It's like that is a language that is so much more intelligent than our mind could ever be. Mm. And so it's got such a bigger perspective. It can take in so much more information. And so that's a very much very connected to intuition, very connected to our awakening. Because right, intuition comes from, you know, that doesn't come from the mind. That's the logical thing. You know, and everyone's intuitive. And I always joke around, my favorite way that we know that is everyone you hear them saying, it's like, I knew I shouldn't have done that. there was this something that they knew, but logically they knew something else. And so they went with logic and did something else, but we all know.
Right.
Yep. And tapping into the feeling of things is a tremendous, like for so many people, it's like, okay, cool. I start following the feeling and yeah, like, wow, I just find myself knowing all kinds of things.
Yeah. And did you grow up in a intuitive, encouraging environment? Like, were you encouraged to listen to yourself? Was that something taught to you, or is that something that you kind of learned as you started to awaken yourself?
It was probably something that happened like later, like I would say after knowledge and after I started, like getting to know all these different parts of me. And so feeling and realizing, you know, I'm sure many things touched on that and showed me things throughout the time, but no, it wasn't a thing for the first half of my life for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, the intuition, especially being a logical person, you know, I err on the side of logic myself, at least I have in the past, but that's been a hard thing for me to kind of switch over from that logic, the logistics kind of like, oh, let me just figure out why that is the way it is and why I felt it here at this time and I didn't feel it here at this time. But quieting that mind down to really listen to those subtle energies and the, you know, that those little movements in our intuition has been, it's been a bit pretty tough path for me, you know? So for a logical, like intellectual, like how did you finally get the brain, convince the brain that it's not the one that needs to be in charge and finally start to listen to those subtle energies? Was it that cold water feeling that you had in your hands that kind of initially started it off?
I think that's been developed over a very long time. I would say but I always tell people to just start with the simple stuff, right? Like, you know, the biggest decision of your life, it's like, if that's the first time we're tapping into intuition, like that's terrifying, right? Because at that point, like your logic is trying to protect you from intuition, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it doesn't understand it. It doesn't understand where it's coming from. It doesn't understand if it works or not. And so logic is trying to protect us from intuition at first. And so it's like, play with little stuff, play with things that don't matter. It's like, hey, where are my keys? You know, when you feel it's like, are they in the bedroom? Are they in the hallway? Are they in the kitchen? And it's like, oh, there's something, the kitchen has an interesting feeling to it. Or there's something unique about the kitchen. And it's like, okay, maybe my keys are in the kitchen. And then I go to the kitchen and find them there. Hmm. And it's like, okay, cool. I knew my keys were in the kitchen.
Okay.
And it's like, you just start playing with that and you start playing with that in everything and do it with all the little stuff. And then there will be big stuff. But it's like we're just strengthening that muscle. It's like, yeah, there is something to this.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that gets, you know, one of the things I think that makes intuition a lot easier is, you know, we're not necessarily going where we think we're going, right? It's like, hey, what's, you know, or if we know to take this job, say, it's like, because it's going to be the best job, not necessarily. Maybe it's going to be the job that drives you crazy, that triggers this like wounded part of you that's actually going to be the greatest thing for your healing process. And so that's the piece of like, we want to, our logic wants to make the right decision. Our intuition is leading us into the thing that would serve us the most.
Right. That's because, you know, with that, there's no right or wrong. There's just the path.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had this really great one with money. Like, you know, money for a long time was a struggle in my life, and it was doing much better. And I had this opportunity to invest the most amount of money I've ever invested before, and it was feeling into it, and it was like, yeah, it feels like a yes. And I also had this weird feeling. It's like, I wonder if I'm supposed to lose this money. And sure enough, it's like, no, I know this is a yes. And I have this weird feeling about it too, that I might lose this money. And sure enough, that's what happened.
Hmm.
And so when that happened, it was like, wow, I've never lost that amount of money before. And so that was bringing up some feelings. And then there was also this hilarity of like, I knew that's exactly what was going to happen.
Hmm.
And that whole process, you know, even getting more distance from it on the other side, if it was watching how like, oh my goodness, how much that changed my relationship with money, because it was like, I went through that. Yeah, it was fine. I don't even know. I don't even remember about it now, right? It's not a thing anymore. Right. It's almost like it opened up my relationship with money even more.
Hmm.
It's like, yeah, are you willing to put money into something that you think you might lose it? And it's like, well, if I know to, yes. And what that gave me was so much more than just making some money off an investment, right?
Yeah. Did that, did that experience kind of confuse you at first about your intuition? So knowing that you were stepping towards something that you're intuitively drawn towards, but also knowing that, you know, it could potentially have a perceived negative effect in your life.
Yeah. I mean, I think it probably gave me more than it took away. Like like it happened and I was like, oh, I was disappointed from it, but I was also laughing because I knew that's exactly what was going to happen. Right. It wasn't as clear. And it was like in that, you know, I was also appreciating, it's like, wow, I'm glad I can laugh about losing the most amount of money I've ever lost before. That's new. I couldn't have done that a year or two ago. Like I would be freaked out.
Yeah.
And so it was like, it was, it was showing me how much I've grown and also just, continued it even more.
Yeah. And those are, I mean, I think those are some of those lessons that stick with us the most, you know, those are the hard lessons learned, but also I think it gives us perspective because, you know, like you said, even though you lost money, that was a beautiful lesson that you learned, you know, about yourself, about, you know, how you feel about money, and can change our perspective about the situation in general. You know, just because we lost, you know, X amount of money, that might be a lot of money on paper, the lesson that was learned from that and the experience that you got from that made it not like you lost the money. It's almost an investment, right? You invested in that lesson that you just learned. You know, and when we can switch our, when we switch our narratives like that, where we feel the opportunities around us instead of the woes or the struggles or the things like that, and that is a perspective shift. You know, I think that's when a lot of the magic can start to happen, and you can realize that you're working with life, and life's not working against you. It's just, it might not be playing by the same rules that you were taught, because culturally we're taught differently about what's good and bad, what's light and dark, what's, you know, all these things. But, you know, what's culturally, like, take a major chord in the Western, for example, a major chord in West is something happy and joyful, but a major chord in the East can be something as far as like around funeral processions, right? Mm-hmm. You know, but, you know, so if you have a person from the East that hears a major chord, they might feel, you know, down and low, but over here we're dancing, we're having a good time, right? And it's just that, that cultural perspective that we have. And then when we can experience something outside of that, that adds to the information that we have, and that adds to the experience that we can open ourselves up to now.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah.
Man, I I struggle with money a lot myself. And one of the things that I realized is, you know, the relationship that I have with money is that I had this arrogance of, I see you for the falseness that you are, right? I see how much of a story has been created around you, and I don't agree with it. So I don't accept that story. And my relationship with money like that basically told money to fuck off. And money was like, cool, no problem. There's 7.5 billion people in this world I can go play with. I don't need you. And so money decided not to play with me. And for the longest time, like, I couldn't retain money. I couldn't keep money. I couldn't make money. And it was finally, you know, a friend of mine that we were sitting talking, and she gave me that perspective of like, well, you keep pushing money away from you. You keep telling money you don't want it. You see through it. And so money's like, fine, I'll go find somewhere else to play with. And so me switching my relationship with money and saying, look, I understand how negative it can be, but I also understand that as a householder, I need a certain amount of money so I can continue to do the work that I do. Right. So I don't need to be a millionaire. I don't need to have all the money in the world, but there is a finite amount of money that I need so I can do my work and feel comfortable doing it. And then also, you know, progress that work onto others, and creating that relationship and fixing that relationship and getting the verbiage more into something that was positive instead of something like, get the fuck away from me, money. It started to change that. And, you know, the right amount of money finds me when I need the right amount of money now, instead of me always searching and taking jobs that I know are taking me outside of my path because of this thing that I feel that I need, but I keep pushing away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was like, it was never about money. It was like what you were taught money was, what you saw other people, like all the other weird stuff, like all the weird stuff that people do with money.
Yeah.
Was never about money.
Right.
It reminds me, I couldn't use the word God for most of my life, because it's like every time someone was talking about God, I could feel like they don't know what they're talking about, right?
Yeah.
There's no dude in the sky that's judging you. Like that's a mind that's created this interpretation of something that it can't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met somebody, I met a man, a friend, and he was talking, he just kept saying God to me. He kept talking about God and kept talking about God. And I was so fascinated because I was like, wow, there's none of that stuff on it.
Mm.
Like he's using this word and it's totally clean. It's like, there's none of the judgment. There's none of the other, all the stuff that the religion and all the other stuff in our culture puts into it. And it was like, just being with him and hearing him use it in such a clear way, it was almost like, oh yeah, that's more what God is.
Mm.
And then I just started using it. I needed to catch up. I hadn't used the word for so long. So I started overusing it because I got a new word in my vocabulary.
Right. Yeah, I had a, I still have a hard time using the word God. You know, like I was saying, I didn't grow up religious, but you know, I grew up in a religious area down in Texas, and I saw a lot of the hypocrisy that the different organized religions offered. You know, from Christianity to Baptism, Catholics, and I tried to go to church on my own as a teenager and tried to find religion, but the God thing never really landed with me, and. And I'm still unraveling it because I know it's a story that's been told to me that it's not the overarching story. It's just a version of, but the whole, you know, repent your sins, crawl on your hands and knees and beg God to forgive. Like that never landed with me. I'm like, why would a person that omnipotently loves everybody, no matter what they did, want you to crawl on their hands and knees and beg forgiveness for something that he's going to forgive you for anyways? Right. So why do we need to do that? And that never landed with me until somebody talked to me about spirit. And I'm like, oh, what's spirit? They're like, well, it's basically, it's God, but the spirit is all loving and is all forgiving and is all encompassing. And you can do the worst thing in the world and that spirit is going to see the good in you and see maybe the deeper reason why you did that, that you might not be able to consciously see as a human and accept you and know that that's part of your path and love you as you kind of figure this out, whether good, bad, or indifferent. And that landed with me. I was like, oh, that's, okay, that feels right, you know, because we're all going to fuck up. We have to kind of mess up to figure out what we do and don't want to do. Like, not all of us can go to the world through this world squeaky clean, you know. Like, I have to drink all the wine and do all the drugs to understand that that's not a life I want to live and that's not a mindset I want to stay in, right? But I would not know that unless that happened to me. And should I be damned forever and go to hell because I found something that didn't work for me and then I found something else? No, we're all just loved. We're all just on this path in our own way. We're just figuring it out. We're going to fall on our faces. We're going to slip and we're going to fall, but there's going to be something there to catch us and love us and say, hey, you're all right. Get up there and you make me proud. Go out there and do what you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And so there's, you know, thousands of different words for that spirit or that source or creator or what it, like, there's so many words for it. And those are all just the words. Like those are all the things that are pointing at the thing that we actually don't have the words to describe or understand.
Right. I think they say words are the poet's biggest adversary, you know, because we can look at something and see the beauty and know how much it makes us feel and all these things. But then it might take a volumes and volumes and volumes of pages and words to actually progress and explain that to somebody else. Mm-hmm. When we can just like look at it and be like, oh, that feels beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and so we were talking about money earlier. It's like the same thing with money. It's like, wow, so many things that we've understood about money and finances and all this stuff. And we're like, what if it's none of those? Hmm. What if it's none of the things that I thought it was? And I got to really just be with this as a frequency, or be with this as like, hey, let's form a deeper relationship than thought.
Hmm. That goes against so many. Yeah. I mean, and that goes against so much cultural teaching out there for a lot of us, you know, to take that story, completely flip it and approach it from a different way. You know, I think that scares a lot of us out there because we've, you know, so many people think that they have got this game figured out. You know, this is the game that I figured out. And for the longest time, like I thought I had this game figured out, right? I had a corporate job. I was making money. I had insurance, all the things, all the you know, check boxes on paper that made it look right. But when I sat down and quieted myself, I was fucking miserable and I wasn't happy at all. You know, I was drinking too much, I was doing a lot of drugs and I just was not in a happy place. And even though I had all these theoretical check boxes of just like things that I was progressing towards. And it wasn't until finally, you know, I had, you know, my dark passenger days and it just kind of destroyed me. And from that crawling back up is when I started to find there's something different out there. And, you know, for that, for me, I had to blow up my whole life, you know, to change that up. And it seemed extremely scary at the time. But, you know, looking back now, I'd do it 1,000 times over,
mm-hmm.
you know, go totally. Through that for that fear, go through that uncertainty and build something that you're proud of instead of just accepting something that you're given.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And like we all have, I think each one of us have our own unique thing. And it's like nobody could tell it to you.
Hmm.
Nobody could show you exactly what you're here to do or be or give you some sort of mold or pattern to stuff yourself into. Because when you do stuff yourself into that mold, you're just going to be miserable in it.
Right. I had to define my freedom, which sounded counterintuitive at the time. But, you know, I when I found myself away from my corporate jobs, I just, I kind of, even though I was doing something that I love now, I was doing healing arts, I didn't have a definition of what I was working towards. And so all of these external kind of things kept coming into me. You know, I got offered a job to open up a company for air conditioning parts. I got offered a job of going back into restaurants. I got offered a job, like all these things to like take me back into what I had left because I had not defined what I wanted to do yet. So all these opportunities still kept coming at me. And it was kind of confusing because, you know, part of me was like, well, go back to comfort, right? There's stability in that. Now you know what you don't want to work towards and you know what you do want to work towards. So you have a better understanding going into these corporate jobs. But there was still something inside of me that's like, dude, there's no way. That's just not your path. You're going to take it out of everything that you're working towards. And so finally, I had to sit down and listen to my intuition to define what freedom wanted to be for me and how I wanted to structure my freedom and how much I wanted to work and what kind of work and blah, blah, blah. But then that gave me those parameters to look back at when I had these random job offers or opportunity offers to come to me and say, hey, you can make this much money doing this kind of work. These are your hours. And I would put that against what I wanted and what my freedom definition was. And it's like, well, it doesn't meet that, right? It's outside of that. I'm working twice as much as I'd like to. I'm not making money to justify that. I'm going to be taken away from my kids. So no, I'm sorry. That's a no, you know, but that gave me that barometer of something to go back towards instead of just, you know, kind of finger in the wind of like, oh yeah, I guess that feels right. Let's do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah. We gotta define that sometimes with, with your healing, the work that you do. So we've talked about breath work, but what other kind of healing modalities, do you utilize in the work that you do with individuals or groups?
It's very intuitive. So, you know, lots of times I'm surprised. It's like, I've never done this before. Like, here's a new thing. Kind of whatever, you know, I think the breath is a part of everything. And then working in the space and the energy, meditation is a beautiful, powerful practice. Mm. Whatever else we need, it can look so many different ways. It might be going into, talking about things or bringing in new perspectives about things. It's like when you ask that question, it's like, wow, it's so many things. I don't even think I have words for some of them.
Well, I think those are some of the best ones, you know, is when the intuition kind of takes over and you don't even realize what you're doing, you know?
Yeah.
I remember there was a yoga teacher I used to frequent a lot. I still do. She's fantastic. But when I first started taking yoga, she would always end her classes with these beautiful, just phrases, beautiful thoughts, beautiful sayings that she would have. and one day after class, I asked her, I'm like, do you have like a book that's this stuff that you come up with? Or, I mean, what do you do with this? And she's like, I don't even know what I say. I just open myself up and it just kind of comes through. And that was one of the first people I met that, you know, told me that they were channeling something. And I'm like, wait a minute, like how does that work? You know? But now I can feel that, where I'm having sessions or I'm guiding classes or even my sound baths where, you know, I've been trying to work with my spirit guides a lot more. And, I have a teacher that's kind of identified himself and as somebody that wants to work with me in a deeper way. And so, you know, calling that person forth and then asking that person to guide my intuition. And then all of a sudden, you know, like my hands are doing things that I never thought they would do. And I'm whistling or I'm chanting something or there's, you know, these smells or these things that are happening around me that I'm like, well, I have no idea how to explain any of this. And I don't really want to. So I'm just going to go with it and just see what happens, you know, and then just getting the feedback from the clients of like, oh my God, this or that experience or this thing that happened or that thing that happened. I can't believe that. And I'm like, I can't either because I don't really remember it. You know, I'm a vessel right now, you know?
And that's a beautiful, you asked earlier about, you know, strengthening intuition and getting more comfortable with it. It's like, that's the very practice, right? Mm. It's like you go with this, well, I'm just really called to do this or use this sound or like whatever it is that you're doing. And then you get incredible feedback from it. And it's like, how did you know to do that? It's like, well, didn't necessarily know like that it was going to land like that or what it was going to do for you, but maybe I just knew to do this. And then you get the feedback and it's like, see, I knew. Mm. Those are all little affirmations.
Yeah.
And so, the beautiful practice.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we got to have those little things and pay attention to them to know that the bigger things are possible. you know, mm-hmm. to know that that your intuition is just like a muscle. It can grow as big as your biceps. You know, it's just, you got to use it. You got to understand it, give it the time and effort that it needs to fully mature into something that you can use on a regular basis.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm at a point now in my life where I don't make many logical decisions anymore. It's really just like, I don't even need to know the details of the question that's being asked. You can feel like, it's like, yeah, that one, what did I say yes to? Okay, cool. That's what I'm doing.
Do you have a feeling in your body for that stuff? I mean, is there like when you, so that example, for example, do you have like a tingling somewhere, or, you know, like a thought sensation or something like that?
I do. Like, it's gotten some very clear feelings in my body in these things.
Mm.
I actually purposely don't talk about them.
Okay.
Because just because it's like, that might not be the way that someone else does it. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, well, let me go look for that and try to match like the way that I do it. And it's like, that might not be the way that it works in you at all.
Right.
And so it's really like, to really start from scratch in yourself. It's like, hey, what does it feel like when I know something is true? Right. What does it feel like when I know something is false? That's actually a beautiful practice to really, you know, when we find alignment, when we find truth, when we really find that connection, it's like, what's that experience that you're having? What does that feel like in your body? And people, you know, maybe it's, oh, it's really expansive or light and open. Cool. That's when you find something that's true or real or whatever. And then it's like, and then what does it feel when you're not there? Like, like, what does it feel like when you think that you're wrong? It's like, oh, that doesn't feel like that. It's like, what if that's your knowing telling you that's not true, what you're thinking? You know,
yeah.
I'm thinking that I'm not good enough. How does that feel in your body? That doesn't feel good at all. It's like, maybe that's your awareness letting you know that that's not true.
That's beautiful. What you were saying about not wanting to talk about your personal experiences with intuition, or like where you feel it and things. You know, I know you're a meditator. Have you done Vipassana meditation or heard of Vipassana meditation?
Uh-huh.
So that's, you know, the silent meditation retreats that they do. That's one of the reasonings behind the silent part of it is, so that we're not sharing experiences that maybe others aren't having, and then them thinking they're doing it wrong, you know, because like you're saying, there's no blueprint for this stuff. You know, like my yes on my bodies might be different than your yes on your body. You know, I might feel it, you might hear it, you know, I might see sound and hear colors. You might just experience a bunch of different things. Right. So, yeah. So I respect that a lot. I've never heard anybody put it that way. A lot of times when I coach people, I try to use my personal experiences to say like, this is where I felt it, or this is what's happened with me. But you know, that's, you know, that perspective that you just shared is very beautiful. Cause I think there's a lot of times, you know, in any healing profession, whether it's medical or, you know, energy work like we're doing, you know, we have the ability to influence our clients in a positive or negative way based on the verbiage that we use, whether we realize it or not. You know, like somebody saying that, you know, like a practitioner having somebody on their table and saying, oh, look at that, your heart chakra's blown out. It's like, wow, well, that's a big vocabulary word, blown out. Like, how do I know what blown out is? Like, you know, am I now progressing and projecting that idea onto you? And now you think your heart's all fucked up, right? Mm-hmm. When I can just say, oh, we're just going to do a little work around your heart chakra today and just see what that does, you know, and not say good, bad, or indifferent. We're just going to do some work, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's presenting how we present that information, how we present that scenario that allows that person to have, you know, maybe a placebo effect or a nocebo effect. You know, if I tell somebody that this energy center in their body is messed up, then they might go around the rest of the day like hovering over that area or finding like, you know, pain or suffering in that area when there's really nothing wrong there.
Totally. Yeah. And you can create something that wasn't there before by getting fixated or resisting it. You know, the one thing that came in just for anyone that's listening to this, like there's nothing bad going on in you.
Hmm.
Right. I mean, there's all kinds of interesting stuff going on in us. None of it's bad. Like, it's all, you know, whether it's some sort of disease or, you know, emotional stuff, it's like, all of these are our doorways into ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so like they're part of our human experience, right? Like when, you know, somebody has a significant thing going on, say some sort of significant illness, it's like, to really look at it like, this is your journey. This is beautiful opportunity. This is going to give you so much growth. It's going to give you so many opportunities to find deeper parts of you. And to treat it like that, it's amazing how much faster people heal.
Wow.
It's like, wait, what if this was a friend? Okay, here's this challenge I'm having. What if this is actually a friend? And instead of fighting against it, we actually get to be friends and be on the same team and work together and see what this is actually trying to show me.
And that changes the story. You know, that changes, then, you know, like we were saying, we love stories. So instead of penning this negative story of like, oh my God, I am cancer now, it's like, okay, what is this beautiful gift trying to show me about myself that I didn't know ahead of time? Like, how is it? Maybe I need to slow down. Do I need to change my diet? Can I have more peaceful practices? You know, what is that? What is this beautiful gift trying to show me instead of like, oh shit, now I'm this disease?
Yeah. I've said to people so many times, it's like, you know, the biggest obstacle to healing is trying to heal. It's like, cause we get into like, we're like, well, I'm going to fight this thing. Like they're fighting cancer. It's like, that is not you fighting cancer has cancer fighting back. It's like, that's not how it works. And so it's like to getting out of that space of like, this isn't something to fight against.
Right.
Like this is actually something to harmonize with. This is something that, you know, if we're talking about cancer, it's like, here, this is a part of ourselves that we've cut ourselves off from, and then we're trying to get rid of it even more. It's like, actually, the healing comes in the integration with it.
Right. There's a, I'm not sure if I'm familiar with this gentleman, but Dr. Zach Bush, he's been kind of doing a bunch of speaking stuff. Right? Beautiful human. Yeah, right.
Yeah, love that guy.
The way he talks about, so he was an oncologist for a while, and he studied cancer in humans and cancer in animals. And one of the things that he found was, you know, a couple things was that, you know, domesticated animals have almost 60 to 70% cancer because of the type of food that they're being fed now, the environment that's outside of what their traditional like eating habits and things like that. But the difference is that, so with cancer with animals and cancer with human, the treatments are very similar, right? There's surgeries, there's medicines, there's chemo, there's radiation, things like that. But the difference is that when animals, let's take a dog, for example, let's say a dog has a tumor, they go in and surgically remove that tumor. The animals have a 90% success rate with curing coming out of cancer after the treatments have been administered. But humans, same kind of similar scenarios, after the cancer is removed, after that tumor is removed surgically, typically will go back into having cancer. And what they're finding is it's, or not finding yet, but a hypothesis that he's thinking about is the difference of consciousness, right? So the consciousness of an animal is very different than the consciousness of a human. Like we don't really fully understand the consciousness of an animal, but what they're looking at is that the story the animals tell themselves, they're not as tied to stories as we are. So when you remove the cancer, the animal's like, cool, I'm a dog again. But the human is like, well, but I'm still cancer. I have these cells that aren't connected, and so I'm cancer. And so they go back to having tumors again, or the tumors metastasize, or they grow bigger. And so just that the strength of the story that we tell ourselves, how bad that story can be, but also how beautiful the story can be. Like if we have the story of abundance, we have the story of I am love, I am surrounded by gifts that maybe I don't understand, but are always around me and that I have the opportunity to tap into whenever I need to. But you know, it's just changing our dialogue, changing the way that the stories land with us.
Yeah. There's like a trickiness though, in that, you know, saying positive affirmations or whatever, it's like, I am abundance. It's like, that's usually poor people that say that, right? So it's not coming. It's actually, it can get used as a way to still combat this thing that I don't want. And so it's different if you're actually like find it in yourself. It's like, oh my God, I am abundance.
Right.
Like that's coming from your deepest truth rather than if I say this enough, I'm going to make this other thing go away.
Right.
So that's the thing. And absolutely, you know, animals don't do that either. That's a beautiful study. I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah. He's a, you know, like I was saying, I love the way that man speaks. There's just a lot of stuff that he approaches in a very different way that I've heard. And it really lands either in the, just because I've never heard it before, or just, you know, you could tell he's put a lot of thought into, you know, what he's putting out there in the world. And, you know, like people like Charles Eisenstein, you know, there's just these beautiful humans out there that are putting out very well thought out information and in different perspectives that might be outside of the cultural norms. And, you know, if there's anything I learned from COVID is we got to listen to the people that are fucking putting their hands up, whether they're right or wrong. They're outside of what the normal narrative is being told. So let's listen to what's being said. Like, why we shouldn't just always follow the common narrative. Let's look outside of that box and then find out if it lands with you or not. That doesn't mean you have to take it as gospel, but just hear what the people have to say and then see if that lands with you.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think with all of, you know, when I see all the crazy stuff, it's like you have all the narratives, you have all of these different things. It's like, it's sort of like the next survival of the fittest is survival of the intuitive. Mm. It's like survival of the ones that are really, you know, I always give the example. It's like, you know, you can go into a grocery store and it all says that it's food, but half of that food is going to kill you if you eat it every day. And so it says food on the package, but does my body actually want to eat that?
Right.
And so it's like, wait, what do I know to eat? What's going to be most nourishing for my body? What do I know about that? You know, these crazy narratives, these people are trying to scare you this way. These guys are trying to scare you this way. It's like, well, actually, when I tap into my heart, what does my heart know about this?
Right.
Like, where do I need to be? Do I need to fill a room with my house with survival goods or whatever? And it's like, no, that doesn't feel like I need to do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think teaching people to start to think and think through their heart or even through their gut, you know, like we were saying about intuition earlier, you know, we're so used to this logical brain making all the decisions. But now, you know, with the heart bios field information that's coming in and the research they're doing, you know, they're understanding now that most of the information, the sensory input information, comes into your heart first and then is either put up to your brain or down to your gut, depending on where it needs to go. But, you know, this heart is, you know, that heart forward kind of idea. Like we take so much information in and we feel so much, we've just been taught to ignore it for so long, you know, and it's, mm-hmm. it's really reawakening a lot of us that idea of the senses that we feel actually have information behind them. You know, like I grew up in the South and it was kind of counterintuitive, you know, where we're always told to trust our gut, right? Trust your gut. But the overall narrative around intuition down South was that it's women's work and it's witchery, right? And so we shouldn't listen to our intuition, right? But you're always told to trust your gut. It's like, well, I'm so confused now, right? Because I'm being told that as a man, you know, intuition is women's work and it shouldn't be looked at because it's feminine. But then I'm also at the same breath being told to trust my gut, you know? So there's like these counter messages that keep going back and forth. You know, granted, we're now getting into a place where we're more accepting with understanding that there is intuition and that is a sense that we have, that is something we can cultivate, that is something that we can work towards, and not just abandoning all these feelings because of, you know, what was used to be called woo-woo stuff. You know, it's like mm-hmm. these things do have important places in our lives and in our bodies. They've just been so quiet for so long, we're forgetting how to listen to them.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it was the way that everyone did it before. It's like once you started having religions come in and people putting themselves in between you and God, now don't listen to your heart. Listen to me. I'll tell you what God says.
Right. I did a show a couple of weeks ago and we were talking about nature and things like that. And one of the, I, you know, just researched the definition of nature. And the Webster's dictionary definition is, I'm paraphrasing, but basically it says, all things that are created naturally, trees, rivers, outside, everything outside of what a human is and what humans construct. So basically it's saying that nature is everything except for humans and what humans can make. But we're from nature. We are nature. We've evolved from nature. We're tied to nature. I mean, just look at how, like, you know, mushroom medicines of psychedelic and non-psychedelic kinds just mesh perfectly with our bio. You know, with it's just like the fibrousness of the mushrooms works perfectly with our gut biome, you know, and things like that. So, like, how can we remove ourselves from nature when that's what we've progressed from? Like, it's just, and again, that's just so counterintuitive, the culture of where we've become to and what we're moving away from.
Yeah. And that definition was created by a miserable person.
I can feel that. I can definitely feel that. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that person is not very happy.
Oh man. Yeah. I my jaw, like, I haven't had many jaw dropping moments recently, but that was one of those of like, damn, okay. That's just what we're teaching kids now, huh? That we're not nature. We're everything. Nature is everything but us. So
yeah. And that's, you know, all the kids that read that, it's like, hey, well, feel into that if that's actually true or not.
Yep. And, you know, kids have the strongest intuitions, you know, they have that beautiful, like, kind of tapped inness whether it's they're so young and innocent that they haven't been affected by the stories that we have out there, or, you know, there's the concepts that, yeah, actually Zach Bush talks about this too, of how, when you're young, your cells can hold more light. And because they can hold more light, we have more connection to that ethereal space that we used to be in, you know, and as we get older, the way our cells operate, they don't accept in as much light. And so that connection starts to diminish over the years. But while they're young, you know, there's still that beautiful connection of awe, of inspiring, of this intuition that they naturally have. But, you know, I can say for, you know, people that I've grew up around that, you know, a lot of that intuition, a lot of those stories that were told as children we were told not to say, like, oh, that's nice, little Johnny, you have a special friend, and imagine it, don't, okay, screw that friend off, go outside and play with your brothers and sisters, you know. And but now, you know, there's people like Matthias DiStefano out there that have been encouraged to utilize these stories and to sit with these ideas as a child, and now in his 30s, I think he is, you know, he claims to have the idea that he can remember all of his past lives, you know, and a lot of that was because he attributes that to his parents encouraging those stories instead of dismissing those as just childhood type of things, you know. And so, like, having children now, you know, my kids are older, they're 13 and 18, but, you know, I was trying to encourage those stories as they were kids too, of like, no, talk about those weird things, talk about your imaginary friends, talk about all these stuff, because, like, I don't know it's not true. Who am I to say, just because I can't see what you're seeing, that's bullshit, you know?
Yeah. My curiosity, not necessarily that it's a thing where your cells get older and can't hold the light. I feel like it's like, as you get older, it's really easy to just understand more about yourself and the world. And it's almost like locking it down more. Like, it's almost like the more and more that we understand, the more possibilities that we cut out.
Hmm.
Because we really get into it. It's like, no, this is who I am. This is what the world is. This is how it works. I'll never do this. This is impossible. It's like, we live in these very limited stories, and it's like, none of those are true.
Yeah.
And you're just you're experiencing, if you're so caught up in the thoughts of what's not possible, that's what you just don't see, all the stuff that contradicts that.
There's a Japanese concept called a beginner's mind. And I think the Japanese word is ikigau, I think it is, but I might be mistaken. But the concept of beginner's mind. So the very first spiritual book I ever read, I don't remember how it came across my path, but it's a Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Shunji Suzuki. And that book changed my life. And it's basically just like a transcribed talks that he had, the Dharma talks that he would have after his sessions, meditation sessions in like the 50s and 60s down in California. And, but the beginner's mind concept is that, you know, when we approach things with the experience that we have through life, the good, the bad, and the indifferent, we're limited on the successes that we have to solve a problem, because we're just going off of the pattern that what's worked and what hasn't worked. But when we can approach a situation from a beginner's mind, to where even if it's coloring this page that I've colored 1,000 times, but I'm going to look at it differently and not see that image of a frog, I'm going to see an image of something else, maybe an abstract image, and instead of using green, I'm going to use purple, right? And so when we approach things in these beginner's mind, everything is an opportunity and everything is an option, and we're not limited by those successes that we've had in the past. And when I first heard that, I'm like, well, then why do we look at successes? You know, I mean, if we have success with something, then shouldn't we repeat that? And the way it was explained to me is that, you know, well, your success back then was with a different mindset, right? Maybe your failure back then was with a different mindset. And now you have this, you know, new set of skills that you've learned. You might even have new people around you that have surrounded you with different skills, right? And so approaching something that you may have failed at in the past, now you have an ability to succeed at, because your toolbox is bigger. The way that you approach is differently. And in the same breath, like, because I had success with something in the past, I'm going to approach it with that same amount of try to success with this one, but I'm going to fail because I didn't absorb the resources and the knowledge that I have now to apply it to this new way, because I could have had more success with a different attack plan to it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, like, having that beginner's mind is just such a good practice, but it's really hard. It's kind of counterintuitive at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, a few phenomena are coming in. You know, one of them is like, you know, we do something magic. We do something out of the box. We do something we've never experienced it before. It came through us, or we were part of it. And then right on the other, and then afterwards, it's like your mind is trying to recreate it again, but it's like, it wasn't your mind that created it in the first place. And so it was like, it was probably an area of real openness or beginner's mind or curiosity.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, these wonderful minds are funny. Yeah. They're amazing. And it's like, we relax them. There's this other phenomenon that I always see. It's like, I think people have profound spiritual experiences all the time, but if they're too far outside of somebody's box, like if it's like, no, that's not possible, it just gets totally forgotten. They don't even realize that it happened. And so I've watched it happen with quite a few people where it's like, you know, there was an experience that happened and they just didn't remember it the next day.
Right.
And it was like, because there was such a fixed, like, no, this is the way that the world works, and that is not possible, and so it didn't happen. It's like, no, it happened, but it doesn't fit into the small box of context that you have right now.
Mm-hmm.
As we start relaxing that box, letting that box get bigger, it's like, really, what if really anything is possible?
Right, right. And it really is. I mean, one of my favorite Einstein quotes is, if you believe something can be a miracle, you have to believe everything can be a miracle. Right. Mm-hmm. And so like these miracle moments that I've experienced in life, I can't explain them. I have no idea where to even start. Like, I'm just looking back at them, but those are the gnosis, that internal knowing of like, that was exactly what needed to happen. I don't know if mm-hmm. I could ever recreate it. I don't know if I could ever explain it, but that was the beauty of that moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not recreating it is as beautiful as just the experience of it itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, you know, that's, I think, you know, a lot of that intuitiveness, like, we want to, in science, we want to be able to recreate, you know, that's how we have scientific evidence, is the repeatable patterns of these experiments that we have. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what, another quote that I love that I just heard recently is, random and chance are just universal laws that haven't been recognized yet. So these things that we consider random and chance, you know, like, there's these pattern making people out there, whether it's an AI or an actual human being, that can see a pattern in something that's random. Maybe we just haven't realized it yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Like, there are miracles happening right now. We just might not be aware of them exactly in this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Love that, man. Love that. Well, we're, so you do a lot of, online courses, you do a lot of traveling. So there's just a lot of content that you're putting out there, which is beautiful. Talk to me about the courses that you have online. I noticed, I think, three on there.
Let's see. Yeah. Right now I've been doing, for the last 6 or 7 years, it's a series called the Harmony Series. We usually just take a topic and dive in. Like, the concept of that is everything, like, absolutely everything is a doorway into more of ourselves. So, so we just take something and dive in and open it up, and it usually turns out getting really cool. So yeah, I do those. Currently I'm on the road a lot doing breathwork events. I do retreats 5 times a year here in Sedona.
Mm.
Then who knows? All kinds of other random stuff too is going on, but
right, yeah,
yeah.
What took you on the road? Like, what took you out of Sedona and decided to make this a kind of a tour kind of idea?
I just love called the places, and it's like that's my favorite, is getting to be with people. I think the most beautiful thing to me in the entire world is to be the witness of somebody that's just, you know, found themselves, or they find a deeper truth, or they wake up to how amazing they are, or realize this, you know, just realize that this story that they've been telling themselves, it's like, wait, that's not true. And you watch them light up from it. And so, it's like, I get to see it's like going to the Grand Canyon 12 times every day or whatever, like, just getting to watch all these beautiful moments. And, I don't know if I know why I do it, but it's just what I'm here to do.
Yeah. 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 When did you finally notice that, you know, you felt like you were doing what you're meant to do? Do you remember that feeling or that moment?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's happened many times. There's been many, like, just mystical moments. It's like, where you just know the entire universe all lined up for this moment right here, right now. And it's just the best.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just been so many of those, and I love them every time they happen.
Yeah, they're so mystical, you know, and then each one, I mean, for me, they've it's kind of weird because I know the feeling, but they've all felt very different, right?
Totally.
But there is like this underlying like completeness or like breath of fresh air or just like this peaceful feeling of like you're doing exactly what you need to do, whether it's like surrounded by synchronicities or whatever it is that's like, you know, laying that foundation for that feeling. But there is, man, when you're on that right path and those things start to light up, it just there is that gnosis of just like you know where you need to be.
Yeah, and I think everyone is on their right path. Like there is a, I've asked this question to so many people. It's such a fun question to ask. And I'll ask this to everyone listening to this right now. It's like when you check in, we got to set the mind aside for this one, because the mind's decided many things about this that aren't true. But it's like when you just feel into to your soul, like what you came here for. What you came here to do, to be, to create, to experience. It's like all of those things. Like, is it possible for you to mess that up?
Wow. I think you might have broke my brain on that one.
What a relief, right? Like, oh my God, like what I'm here to do and be and create and experience. It's like if you couldn't even mess it up. Like how much weight, like we realized, like maybe how much it was like, wow, I was trying not to mess it up. That's where I was running from, but you can't mess it up. It just opens up this entirely new freedom. There's a ease with life. There's a flow. There's a way that we get to be present with absolutely everything even more.
Wow. I just felt my shoulders drop whenever you said that. I felt relief after you said that. Because, you know, we have no idea how this is all playing out. And if that is like whatever you would consider a misstep is the best move you've ever made to put you on to continue you on your path of wherever you're going.
So I'll share this story real quick. I know that we're running down on time, but when this really like locked into me, where I got this so clearly, I had this experience where I was doing an event in Canada and I had forgot something at the house. And the class is about to start, and so I had to like really quickly get back to the house to go pick this up, and I start having this experience where I'm driving, but I'm in two places at the same time. I'm also living like a minute in the future, and so everything that's happening to me right now, I know absolutely everything that's going to happen. I know everything that I'm going to see. It's like everything that I'm experiencing has already happened, every moment of it. And it's raining, and I'm having this experience where I'm like, the house was set back down the sidewalk, and it's like I know that I'm gonna just run really fast because I'm running to this house to get the stuff. I know that I'm gonna hit that porch, that wet porch, and my feet are just gonna fly out from under me, like straight up in the air, and I'm just gonna come crashing down. And I know that all of this is gonna happen, and I'm not doing anything to stop it. I'm still
Just
like
full
just very
speed.
clear, this is what I'm doing full speed. There was no thought about not doing it. And so when I'm laying on the ground soaking wet, tore my clothes up, I was just laughing hysterically, because that was one of those moments that was like, this was one of those perfect moments that was absolutely going to happen whether I wanted it to or not. And it was like this, just this beautiful moment. That was one of the things where that really started dropping in. It's like, wait, there are things that I came here to experience that I came here to experience. And so, yeah, well, let's just keep receiving what the day brings me. Like, you know what? I might have a rough one today. All kinds of things might go wrong today. Instead of making somebody wrong for it or making myself wrong, it's just like, what does that feel like? What is that giving me the opportunity to feel or be with or be present with? So, yeah, it's like we can't, I don't, we can't mess it up. And it's such a relief.
That is, man. Gosh, that is I'm gonna be noodling on that for a while. It reminds me of something that Ram Dass said back in the day. It's he was talking to his what he would call his spook friend Emmanuel, this spirit entity that spoke through another channel to him. Said to him one day, "Well, Ram Dass, you're in this human experience. Why not learn the curriculum, right? Be a fucking human being. Understand the full spectrum of the human emotions. Understand the good days, the bad days. Understand that your perception of good might be not good and your perception of bad might not be bad, right? It's all what you are, but you're not going to figure it out until you become a human, right? Stop trying to be and live in this ethereal spirit plane. Be a human for a little bit, right? Learn what it's like. That's why we're here.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, it's like we came from spirit to have the human experience. Why are we trying to be somewhere? Are we trying to be in spirit all the time?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a paradox. I heard somebody say that the other day and I'm like, oh my God, like that makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, if I wasn't meditating all the time, I'm afraid I'd just have a bottle in my hand, you know? So, you know, it's like, I'm taking one for the other, but you know, addiction can manifest itself in many different ways, whether what's perceived good or bad. So it's finding the balance of, okay, yes, I understand that I'm a, you know, I'm a light of a spirit of some sort. You know, I have this thing that I'm looking towards, but I'm also in a human body and I have this job to do, this experience to learn, this, you know, culture to understand or whatever it is. But like, take the time to learn that. Know that that spirit's there and it'll always be there to hold you, but also like figure out this human stuff too.
Yeah. And that, because that's usually, I often tell people, you know, all of the things that we're looking for is found in the things that we don't want to look at. And so, you know, like talking about addiction, it's like that's a way to kind of, you know, change the way that we feel or change the way that we experience, where it's actually like the invitation is like, hey, when something's comfortable, can you allow yourself to feel it more? Right. Can you find, and my two favorite practices in the world are breathing and relaxing. It's like you start breathing and relaxing. Every time you relax your body a little more, you can feel more. And it's like, okay, cool. Now I actually get to meet this, because it's right. It's hard to feel something when we're fighting against it.
Right.
But it needs to be felt. It wants to be felt. It's like, it's that is the integration that's happening. It's like, well, when I can actually just sit and allow and feel this, okay, now I get to meet it. Now I actually get to know what it really is. And it was never what I thought it was.
Right. But it's quieting ourselves down enough and giving ourselves that space to hear it for what it truly is and not what we're expecting it to be.
Yeah. Cause I mean, we didn't come here to avoid anything. And it's in those things that we avoid is often some of our greatest teachings, some of our greatest openings or awakenings. It's like, cool. Yeah. Well, I'm feeling really uncomfortable right now. And I want to do something about it to distract myself from it. Instead, it's like, what if I come back and just be uncomfortable?
Yeah. Lean into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Teachers manifest themselves in the strangest of ways. You know, like we have no idea that that was a teacher for us until we can accept the fact that like we're being taught something. Put the ego aside, put the preconceived notions aside, take out the beginner's mind and just sit with your intuition and see how it lands with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I had, you know, functional depression for a big chunk of my life, because I was really good at running from it. Like I was a professional athlete and I could always like working out, I could always feel better.
Yeah.
And I realized that it's like, oh wait, working out was always an avoidance and I was avoiding a lot. So I worked out a lot.
My yoga practice turned into that for a little while for me. I realized I was using my yoga practice to run away from life instead of utilizing as that healing modality that it started out as.
Yeah. And so there was a profound experience that I had where it was like, it was like almost like a deep funk coming on, like a depression. And I had a bike race or a bike ride scheduled for that day. And I was like, I know that riding my bike will make me feel better, but I know that it's not time to feel better. And so instead I just sat there a couple hours and just really spent some time feeling and being with the sensation, the energy, the frequency, rather than what I even thought this was, really just surrendering to whatever these feelings were. And yeah, it was like a 2-hour funk.
Wow.
I also got the awareness or the download that came with it. It was like, I used to turn this into like a 6-month thing or a 4-month thing, like from always running from it, stretching it out. It's like, it was a 2-hour funk in my day that right. I used to turn into like a 6-month funk.
Wow. And that's just sitting with that sensation instead of trying to run from it and prolonging it. That's, you know, and that's, you know, I have a friend of mine that talks a lot about how, you know, we're conditioned now to not sit with sensation. We want to move on to the next thing as soon as possible, you know, whether it's gratification or whether it's depressive feelings, you know, we don't want to sit with those intense sensations. We want to move on to the next thing. But sitting with that intensity, you know, sitting with that sensation is probably the medicine that we need. Just like you said, you know, the 2 hours turn, you know, it was went from 2 hours of you sitting with your thoughts and that feeling rather than 6 months of, or 6 weeks of working out through it and trying to run from it and push away from it. And it just lingering and lingering and lingering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sit with those sensations, deal with the difficult while it's still easy.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been doing that for a long time now. So now like when, you know, shit's hitting the fan in some way, there's also this excited part of me too. It's like, okay, cool. We got a 30-day notice last summer that we were getting, you know, they're kicking us out of their out of the house that we were living in.
Okay.
And it was like, you know, it's like, you got 30 days to move. It was like, oh wow, that's a surprise. I didn't know I was moving this month. And there was all kinds of feelings that came up in that. And then there was also this excited part of me that was like, what else would make me feel this way?
Mm.
What else would give me the opportunity to feel this combination of intensity and energy and all that stuff? And so, you know, it was powerful and profound, and I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah. And just changing the narrative, you know, instead of accepting it for what perceived to be negative, you know, you saw the possibility and the opportunity in it. And I think that's, you know, with a lot of this stuff that happens in our lives, it is an opportunity for us to get out of our pattern making machines, or what, you know, whatever pattern that we've gotten ourselves into, whatever comfort, whatever normality, and change something up. You know, change is one of the hardest things we'll ever do in the world, but that's how we grow. Like I had a friend tell me one time, you don't grow sitting on the beach drinking margaritas with your feet in the sand. I mean, that's fun. You know, but your growth happens when your face is getting dragged across the concrete by the hair and you're like, fuck man, when is this going to stop? It's going to stop when you learn your lesson and you start to embrace what's happening around you and find a way to let this work with you instead of work against you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what's cool too, it's like the more that becomes a practice too, you'll catch it much quicker than before you get to the point where you're getting your face dragged across the concrete, right? like these things are all whispers first. Right. By the time it gets to that, it's like we've been ignoring it for quite some time.
Yes. Yes. So. And I've been practicing listening to those whispers so they don't become that face dragging kind of a ordeal that I'm totally used to now.
I mean, that's what I would choose too. So.
Yeah. Well, Zach, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate all your time and your wisdom. Really great time talking with you. So you're going to be in Vegas in the next couple weeks. Is that right?
I'm going to be there this week.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of where else I have some Colorado stuff, like Boulder, Denver. I'll be in Utah. Trying to think of where else I will be. Have a retreat coming up next month.
Nice.
But yeah, all that stuff's on my website.
Perfect. Yeah. I'll leave links to the show notes and for your website, how to get in contact with you, Instagram, all that stuff. And Zach, thank you again, brother. I appreciate what you do in this world, all the healing that you're putting out there and your time and your knowledge, man. Thank you so much, brother.
Oh, thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
All right, brother. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for spending time with Zach and I. Check out the show notes for any links to get in touch with Zach and see what he's up to, where he's off to next. And please like or subscribe to the show. Send it to your friends. Obeisance and love. We'll see you guys next time.